All Talks of Life with Chris Viniquez.
You heard the man. This is All Talks of Life with Chris Viniquez. I'm your host. We're back, ready to go for week two, round two, divisional round of the NFL playoffs. Round one, we had maybe like one good game, a couple of snoozers. But we got the teams out of the way, the lower seeds out of the way, except for the San Francisco 49ers. Shout out to them. I picked the Cowboys. They came out. 49ers did what they had to do. Shut my mouth. So week one of the NFL playoffs, wild card round, super wild card round. Not all that was cracked up to be, but do not worry. The divisional round is here. The cream of the crop has risen. That's right. The Elite Eight of the NFL is ready to go starting Saturday. And I'm going to get into it. I'm going to do something a little different today in segment number two. So stick around for that, because you know that this is All Talks of Life. We're going to talk something a little different today. But let's start off with the divisional round. Week number two, round number two, Elite Eight. Let's get to it right now. Bengals and the Titans. Well, Bengals at the Titans. Saturday, 4:30 p.m., CBS. Tennessee Titans, 3.5-point favorite. I personally don't think it should be 3.5. I think that's a little close. And I'm going to tell you why. You look at the Cincinnati Bengals all season. They have been fortunate to be a relatively healthy team. They have not had major injuries to major players all season. It's not like last season when Joe Burrow went down. They haven't had an extended period of time where they had, somebody out that is really, really important to them. But right now, in the divisional round, coming up against the number one seed, coming up against King Henry, who's coming back, coming up against the Titans, who are coached by my coach of the year, Mike Vrabel. The Cincinnati Bengals have decided that this is the time to let the injury bug hit them. Obviously, you know I'm joking because they didn't decide that. But the injury bug has decided to hit them at the wrong time. I want you to hear what's going on right now with Cincinnati. Joe Bacci, he's out. Stanley Morgan, hamstring, he's questionable for Saturday's game. So he's not going to be 100%, because when you come in playing with a hamstring injury, as a wide receiver, especially as a running back, in those two positions, it's really, really not good. We know you're not going to be 100%. Jordan Evans, linebacker, he got back. He got back to the injured list on Thursday. So he most likely, he's not going to be playing. He was activated, and then he was reverted to the injured reserve on Thursday. He got a knee issue. Akeem Davis Gaither, linebacker. He returned to injury reserve on Thursday as well after he was activated. So they activated the brother from the COVID-19 list, and then he had to go back on injured reserve Thursday. And obviously, the big one right now for the Cincinnati Bengals, Larry Ogunjobi, injured reserve, out for the playoffs. He's out. Big part of the line. Obviously, we know that Trey Hendrickson is the number one there on the line. We understand that Gubbard right there, if I'm saying his name right, Gubbard or Hubbard, he's number two on the line, 7.5 sacks this season, and Ogunjobi was third. He's one of the better players on this defensive line, but it doesn't stop there. We got three linebackers out for the Cincinnati Bengals. One defensive tackle so far. Then we got to go to Mike Daniels, a second defensive tackle out. He's not going to come in. He's not playing Saturday. Again, I'm sorry. He most likely won't play Saturday. And if he plays, He's going to be hampered. He's not going to be 100%. Not sure. I'm sure it's a game time decision. It's not looking too good for Mike Daniels. Obviously, we know that Tupuo, he's also not going to play. So right now, the defensive line of the Cincinnati Bengals, not looking too good. The linebacking core of the Cincinnati Bengals, due to injury, not looking too good. And then here's the thing, though. King Henry, the king, is coming back. The best runner in the NFL. The best running back in the NFL. The most bruising is coming back. Now, I understand he's not going to be 100%. I get all of that. I understand all of that. And excuse me earlier, the brother's name is Sam Hubbard. Excuse me for that. 7.5 sacks this season. Brother could play. But King Henry coming back. And now you got all these injuries to the defensive line. You got all these injuries to the linebacking core. This tells me a couple things here. The offensive coordinator could do a couple things. He can come out, run the ball straight down the gut with the big man. If the Cincinnati Bengals are trying to overcompensate by bringing in an extra linebacker or extra safety, putting somebody else in the box, Ryan Tannehill's going to have to go to work. The OC's going to have to start calling some play action. That's going to open up some nice lanes for A.J. Brown, open up some nice lanes for Julio Jones, open up some nice lanes for anybody in that passing game. Because if you're looking out for Derrick Henry, for the most bruising and best running back in the league, and you're trying to overcompensate because you don't have a defensive line and your linebacking core is hurt, you're going to leave it open to the passing game. Now, I understand you put the ball in the hands of Ryan Tannehill, certain things can happen, certain things can't. But this ain't the Ryan Tannehill from Miami. Everybody knows that. It's not the same guy. He's a better quarterback. He's not elite, but he's not the guy that he was in Miami. So my thing with Ryan Tannehill is this. He's going to have to get it done because I think that Cincinnati is probably going to have, they're going to have to dare him to win the game. Cincinnati, with that depleted defensive line, is going to have to say, well, we're going to have to overcompensate. We're going to have to bring somebody else in the box. And guess what? We know Julio Jones ain't the same. We know A.J. Brown's been dinged up. And we know Ryan Tannehill's not elite. So you're going to have to beat us passing the ball. So I don't think the game is going to be a blowout. I just don't think 3.5 points is going to cut it. I'm taking the points. I'm going with the over. I'm going with Cincinnati by about 7, by about a touchdown. 6-7 points. But I'm not going 3.5. I don't think it's going to be a field goal kind of game. I really don't. Because if the Titans score quick, with that defense that the Bengals have, if the Titans end up getting the ball back and the Titans begin to pour it on, I just don't know how much is too much for Joe Cool. I know Joe Mixon, man, he's good. Jamar Chase, offensive rookie of the year and all that. But these are young guys. These are not seasoned veterans that have been through playoff wars that understand, like, what do we do when it's just going all wrong? Because the defense, they're just thin right now up front. They're just thin up front right now. So Tennessee could either put up punches in bunches or Tennessee could come out and just, you know, wear him down to the point where the defense can't stop him anymore in the second half. So I got Tennessee winning this game by at least a touchdown. I'm not going with the 3.5. I'm going to go with 7 points. But I think it should still be a good game because obviously I still believe in Joe Cool. I still believe in Jamar Chase, Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon is a heck of a running back. Top 10 in this league. Maybe top 5. They got what it takes to stay in this game. I just don't think they got what it takes to win this game. That's my thought on Cincinnati versus Tennessee. Moving on. The late game. 49ers Packers. Fox, 8:15. Green Bay in Lambeau, 5.5-point favorite. I kind of disagree with the odds makers here. I disagree a little bit with the odds makers this week because for me, they have this game as the biggest spread. They have this game as the biggest blowout or, you know, just the game that's going to be the widest margin. Obviously, they don't have any blowouts because they don't have anything that's two scores, but they got this game as the widest margin of the weekend. I really don't think so. Now, here's the thing, though. I understand why they put it at 5.5. Because Green Bay is healthy. Green Bay got David Bakhtiari back in week 18. They're going to get Randall Cobb back. Aaron Jones is good to go. Devontae Adams good to go. Aaron Rodgers got another week of rest. He's good to go. Za'Darius Smith, I think, is coming back. So right now, in this time, as I speak to you, Jaire Alexander should be coming back. So the Green Bay Packers are getting healthy at the right time, unlike the Cincinnati Bengals, who are getting hurt at the wrong time. So Jaire Alexander, he should be back, like I said. You know, he had a shoulder injury early in the season. David Bakhtiari didn't play all last season. He didn't play all this season except for one game, week 18. Aaron Rodgers called him up, said, yo, man, just give it a go. Try it out. Said, I did it for Aaron. Came out, played, I think, 27 snaps. It looked okay. Got to get that wind under him, but at least he got a game under him. At least now he knows, hey, I'm ready to go. One of the top 5 tackles in the game. Aaron Rodgers says, I'll take 60% of David Bakhtiari and I'll be comfortable. I think you're going to get probably a little better than that. You're definitely, no way, no how you're getting 100%. I don't even think you're getting 90% of David Bakhtiari. But I take 70, 75 of David Bakhtiari over a bunch of tackles in this league. The man is that good. MVS might not play Saturday. He's doubtful right now. He's not even questionable. He's doubtful. So, Aaron Rodgers might not have one of those faster weapons on his team. But yet and still, the Packers are pretty much healthy. Za'Darius Smith, he should be playing on Saturday. He hasn't played since week one. He had a back injury. So Za'Darius Smith is designated to come back, and he should be playing Saturday. So Za'Darius Smith, whether he's 100% or not, he's going to be a help. Obviously, we know Jaire Alexander should be back. He's going to be a help. So the Packers are getting healthy at the right time. They're getting some key players back at the right time. There's no reason. No reason why the Packers should lose this game. I'm going to tell you that right now. I just don't want to hear people talk about this is Aaron Rodgers' fault. If plays happen on the field where Aaron Rodgers is not on, I don't want to hear people talk about this is Aaron Rodgers' fault. If the Packers blow a defensive assignment and Aaron Rodgers doesn't play defense, this is not the NBA. You don't play both sides of the ball. He's not Deion Sanders, who played wide receiver, cornerback, and punt returner. That ain't it. He plays quarterback. I don't want to hear none of that. The other team kicked a field goal. Aaron Rodgers doesn't play defensive tackle. He can't. Can't do all of that. He can't block a field goal. But now, if Aaron Rodgers goes out there and stinks it up, throws an interception, which he only threw four all season, then trust, we got to come down hard on him. Because Aaron Rodgers is potentially one of the 10 greatest quarterbacks we have ever seen. The second greatest talent at the position we've ever seen behind Patrick Mahomes. You need another Super Bowl to distance yourself from a bunch of other guys in the top 15, top 20, and get into that top 5 conversation, Mr. Rodgers. You need that. And I understand that the general population is going to talk about, oh, Aaron Rodgers can't get it done. But I don't want people coming to me talking about Aaron Rodgers didn't get it done if Aaron Rodgers ain't playing defensive tackle, defensive end, cornerback, and the dang and the defense gives up a dang Kevin King before to have 7 free points like they gave up last year. If Aaron Jones gets the ball, first play of the second half, hands off, bang, fumble. Aaron Rodgers wasn't the guy running the ball. I don't want to hear all of that. But again, the brother deserves heat. If he comes out and throws less than 250 yards, which he's done this season. If he comes out and is not his usual self, 37 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions, number 1 QBR. If you ain't that on Saturday, bring the rain. Bring the rain. Packers got to win this game. This team got to win this game. You can't come out there all soft against this 49ers team that's going to bring the heat. They're going to bring the fire. They want some of Aaron Rodgers. The 49ers are not scared of Aaron Rodgers. This defense, they can rush the passer. Fred Warner, Nick Bosa. They can get after him. It's a good team. It's a good defense over there. They got some ballers on the defensive side of the ball. The problem with the 49ers is they need a consistent quarterback. A guy who's going to be on the field, not injury prone, and a guy who's not going to make that late game mistake. Because they got a nice run game. They got the best left tackle in the league. Deebo Samuel is really, really good. Brandon Ayuk is a nice number 2. And George Kittle is a top 2 tight end in this league. They got a good team over there. So that's why I don't think it should be 5.5. But I understand why it's 5.5. Packers got healthy at the right time and had a week off. So there are no excuses in Green Bay. 0. The whole team is on alert. There's no reason why you shouldn't win this game. You know the 49ers. You're in the frozen tundra. They just had a game you didn't. You're healthy. They're a little dinged up. Got to get it done. Got to get it done. San Francisco 49ers right now. They got a couple people on the injury list as well. It's not as bad as I was talking about earlier with the Cincinnati Bengals. But they got a couple guys. Nick Bosa, he was in concussion protocol, so he's listed as questionable. You know, if Nick Bosa doesn't play, that is a huge deal for the San Francisco 49ers. We know that. That goes without saying. I think that another big issue for the 49ers, D Ford, he's not going to return. We knew that about a month ago. So that's another guy that gets after the pass rush. And if Nick Bosa is not there, it's really, really going to hamper the San Francisco 49ers. So a big part of this game for the 49ers is going to be whether Nick Bosa could play or not, because then they won't have any pass rush. And you could count on the Green Bay Packers just going to absolute work in the pass game, because there won't be any pass rush coming from that team. And obviously, like I said, before with the Bengals, if you overcompensate and you gotta and you have a man, a quarterback with the IQ of Aaron Rodgers, and you bring another guy in the box, or you bring an extra blitzer, it's just gonna play into his hands. It's gonna play into his hands. And he's gonna be able to go to work. So Green Bay Packers, I got them at I think that I'm not going to take the points in this game. I know everything I just said about Nick Bosa and all that. I'm just not sure. I don't know if he's going to play or not right now. I know he's trying his hardest to get back on the field. Obviously, 49ers are trying their hardest to get him back on the field. Concussion protocol is a completely different protocol than it was years ago. So maybe he'll play. Maybe he won't. I just am not sure. But if he doesn't play, it should be more than a 5.5-point game. But I think he gets on the field. And with saying that I think he gets on the field, the San Francisco matches up well with this team. We've seen that before. And I'm not comfortable taking the points, so I won't take the points. And I'll say that the Packers, they get out of there. I'll say they win by about 3 or 4 points. I'm going on the under. I'm not even going to front. I fully expect the Green Bay Packers to win this game. I just think it's going to be a tight one Saturday night on Fox at 8:15. I can't wait to see my man Aaron Rodgers go to work. Mr. Rodgers' neighborhood go to work. So Saturday, I got the two number one seeds going on. They're getting healthy at the right time. The other teams, the lower seeds, are kind of going the other way. Let's get to Sunday. Rams, Bucks, Buccaneers at home, 3 p.m. on NBC. 2.5-point favorite. Here's the thing, though. Thursday, the spread was 3. By Friday, it dropped down to 2.5. That's very telling. Very, very telling. Because the odds makers will give you 3 points at home. Automatic 3 points. Just because you're home, they'll give you a 3-point advantage as the home team. But if you fall under that, that means that Vegas is saying, hey, there's something going on with this team. And here's what's going on with this team right now. They're just banged up. Last year, coming into the playoffs, they were healthy. Tampa Bay was ready to go. They were rocking. They were going. Everybody was in there. They were ready to play. They showed up, won the Super Bowl. We all saw it. Tom Brady got number 7, the GOAT at quarterback. But it's a little different this time around. Sean Murphy Bunting, cornerback, his hamstring, he was limited at Thursday's practice. Lavonte David was limited at Thursday's practice because of a foot. Breshad Perriman, because of his hip, didn't even practice on Thursday. Giovanni Bernard, the backup running back, practiced at a limited capacity on Thursday because of a hip and knee. Rojo, Ronald Jones, he didn't practice on Thursday because of an ankle. Leonard Fournette, he practiced on Wednesday. But obviously, at a limited capacity, he has a hamstring issue right now, so he's not going to come in 100%. But here's the big thing, though. Tristan Wirfs, questionable. He was in a walking boot, and he has a chance to play. That's what Bruce Arians said. He has a chance to play. Walking boot, the best right tackle, arguably in the league today, is in a walking boot this week. And might play. Ryan Jensen, we saw him come out the game, then he came back. He's a little dinged up right now. Ryan Jensen, one of the better centers in this league. A guy who's dependable for Tom Brady. Questionable for Sunday's game. Josh Wells, another guy on the offensive line. He's not going to come in at 100%. Obviously, we know Chris Godwin, done for the year. Antonio Brown, done for the year. Big, big injuries for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And because the injury when the injury report came out for Tampa Bay, that's when the points went down from 3 to 2.5. So obviously, you already know the pick because I said it before the season. So every game that goes on in these playoffs, you already know, is given away. My pick remains the Los Angeles Rams. Matt Stafford, OBJ, Cooper Kupp, Tyler Higbee, Aaron Donald, Von Miller, Jalen Ramsey. Those brothers are going to be on the field, ready to ball, ready to go in Tampa Bay. Warm weather. The champs got a target on their back, and my pick is ready to go. I'm going with the Rams. I'm going sticking with my pick. Sunday, 3 o'clock on NBC. Bills Chiefs, CBS, 6:30. KC, 1.5-point favorite. This is the game that the odds makers have the closest. And this is, again, where I say I disagree. I think that San Francisco and Green Bay are going to be the closest game, especially if Nick Bosa plays. I'm counting on Nick Bosa playing. So I think that the 49er defense is going to get that obvious boost right there from that great pass rusher. So I'm counting on that. And obviously I'm counting on San Francisco's offense, as they have been good with Deebo Samuel, the wide back, as he calls himself now, and they have a good offensive line. I'm counting on a couple things for it. You know, obviously, they like I said before, they play Green Bay good. But this game right here is designated by the odds makers to be the closest game of the weekend. And I disagree with that. And I know a couple people say that they think this is the AFC Championship game. I disagree with that as well. I disagree. The Buffalo Bills are healthy. I understand why it's a 1.5-point game. Buffalo's healthy. Buffalo does not have a long injury report. Buffalo's got healthy at the right time. They're not missing, you know, players right now that are like super important to them. You know, guys that are really, really big time and things like that. So, I think that for me, even though Buffalo is relatively healthy, even though Buffalo is ready to go, even though Buffalo, you know, I just think that the Chiefs right now, they're just in the right place. They're in the right place right now. This is not the Kansas City Chiefs that were 2-3 and lost to the Buffalo Bills. I know that the Bills came in an Arrowhead, and I know that they beat them 38-20. I understand that. I hear you right now. But it's not the same team. It's not the same scheme. It's not the same quarterback thinking. He's not just launching the ball down the field. He's taking the short routes. The wide receivers are in tune with him. The offensive line is understanding each other a little better. It takes a little while for a new offensive line, three new starters to come together to gel with the quarterback, with the running back, and things like that. It just takes a little time. And that time has come now. And we saw that they were 2-3. And obviously they ended up 12-5. They turned it around. They went to work. They did what they had to do. Darrell Williams, their running back, their backup running back, he didn't practice on Thursday. But obviously, we expect Clyde Edwards-Helaire to play. So they should be good there. Kansas City they're just getting healthy at the right time. They got healthy at the right time. And Buffalo's healthy too. But healthy versus healthy. Kansas City versus Buffalo. We saw what Kansas City did last year. how they beat them. And I think that's going to happen again. Kansas City's clicking. Kansas City's working. Pat Mahomes doing his thing. I'm going with the Chiefs. Told you I was going to do something new. Something I haven't done before to a certain extent. A couple, probably like about a year ago, I would say, maybe. I did some movie reviews. My boy Jose Gonzalez, who you've heard on the podcast a couple times. We reviewed Godzilla vs. Kong. And we also reviewed the Justice League, the Snyder Cut, Zack Snyder's Justice League, which was much, much, a million times better. I can't even say much, so many times, because then we'll run out of show. But it was infinitely better than that junk that was put out in 2017. The Snyder Cut did its thing. So I did the review on that, right? Sat down, watched it for hours. But I want to talk movies a little bit again. But I'm not going to review. I'm not going to go in a full review. What I'm going to do is this, something a little different. I was going to do a top five. But I'm going to do a Mount Rushmore, and I'm going to do an honorable mention, and I'll tell you why in a minute. A lot of people rag on sequels, and this is the part where it's new. I'm going to talk about sequels right now in this segment. A lot of people rag on the second movie, the third movie of a series, and often they're right. It's not the same. It's not as good as the original. But I want to give some props today. I want to give props to some sequels today. Sequels that deserve love. Sequels that were well thought out. Sequels that were better than the original. That's what I want to talk about. Greater sequels. That's what I'm getting into right now. If you have a list, if you have a top five, top 10, I'm not sure if I could even come up with a top 10 of better sequels that are better than the original, but I managed to squeeze out five, but one of them, I got to qualify it. So really, it's a top four, Mount Rushmore. But I think that there's certain movies that definitely better than the original. A lot of movies that failed the second and the third and the fourth time, and the series just got worse. And it was just a money grab, and people just, you know, we love stories. We love storytelling. That's why we listen to podcasts. That's why we watch movies and soap operas. I don't watch soap operas, but I know that soap operas go on for a long time. You know, that's a reason why, you know, Jesus told stories. He knew that people love stories. There's stories all over the Bible, right? The Bible is one big love story. Obviously, there's a lot of things, you know, that, you know, don't display love. But obviously, it's one big love story of the Father to us. And everything that he did and the story of that. So we are human beings who love storytelling. That's why, you know, a lot of people right now, instead of looking at other posts, they just go into stories, right? Stories are getting bigger on Instagram, on Facebook. Now even Twitter created a story section where people are just telling a story about their day or about their week, you know, through pictures and through videos, their thoughts, other than postings and getting likes and getting comments. And getting shares, they're just view this story right here. So sequels tell stories. And here's the thing though, I'm not limiting sequels to just part two. So I'm not doing only direct sequels. Because obviously a sequel is something that comes after the original. So I'm not limiting it to just part two. There's part threes and fours and things like that of certain franchises that might be better than the original. I got one. And I'm going to start there. I'm going to start at Rocky 3. I got it at number 4. Now, I know that a lot of people love Rocky. It won an Academy Award and things like that. It was the first of its kind. It's a great movie. I get it. You know, the first time you seen that brash Apollo Creed, you know, kind of like a Muhammad Ali style kind of guy and, you know, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. He didn't say that, but obviously that was his style. That's the way that he fought. He was the heavyweight champ and all that good stuff. And then obviously, you know, we know the plot, how, you know, he just picked any fighter out of the blue. And obviously they, you know, landed on Rocky. And then, you know, the rest of the story. Rocky 2, I like it better. I like Rocky 2 better than Rocky 1. I like the opening scene where they come in and you know, they're in the ambulance and the music is playing and they're riding to the hospital. They get to the hospital. The reporters are there and these guys are all beat up and swollen faces. And, you know, Apollo's like, oh, I'll give him a rematch after he said in the ring he wouldn't give him a rematch. And, you know, he's embarrassed and things like that. And they were in the hospital and they were talking to each other and, you know, like great sportsmen and things like that. And the movie rolls on. They fight again. Rocky wins the title and, you know, says, yo, Adrian, and all that stuff. And Rocky 2 was great. I loved it. But I like Rocky 3 even better. I think that Sylvester Stallone and the team did a marvelous job when it came to making the movies better up to part 3. Obviously, I think part 4 was just a little bit downgraded. I still love it. You know, it was a great fight, you know, that they put on the cameras there, him and Ivan Drago, but I think that the story just, you know, the plot and everything like that, I think it just comes down a little bit. Rocky 5 was terrible, just probably one of the worst movies of all time. Rocky Balboa was okay. And I've never seen any of the Creed movies. I know right now you're like, what? You're crazy? Creed was great. A lot of people tell me it was really good. And I know that it has video games and spinoffs and stuff like that. So the Rocky franchise is huge. It's big. Made a ton of money. But I go with Part 3 as my favorite one that I think is the best one. I know, you know, you hear a lot of, you know, boxing people and things like that. Max Kellerman also has that as his favorite one. He thinks it's the best one. I agree with that. Other people I've talked to in my private life, they also think that Rocky 3, and I'm talking about boxing fans. I'm talking about when I talk to boxing fans, not just, you know, regular general consensus kind of moviegoers and sports fans. Not that. I'm talking about boxing fans. Certain boxing fans that I talk to, they think, yes, Rocky 3 is the best one, and here's why. Eye of the Tiger. It starts off with Eye of the Tiger and that montage with Mr. T, you know, watching Rocky at all these fights. And, you know, it's like a real feel contender looking at the champion and he wants him and he's scouting him because that's what really happens in life, in the boxing world. You see pay-per-view fights and you see the upcoming challengers sitting in the rows, in the seats, in one of the seats. With his promoter and things like that. And they're checking it out, probably with his wife or something like that and his kids or something like that, you know, and they have a night out wherever the fight is at. And they're just there. He's just there to scout. His team is there to scout the guy in the ring that they're going to fight. You might go to, you know, the other guy might go to his fight as well. They might scout each other. They might be there, you know, just causing a hoopla and getting the marketing going like, yeah, I'm going to his fight. He's going to my fight. We're watching each other. A lot of times fighters will fight on the undercard, you know, of other guys, obviously, and they'll stick around and they'll watch the fight knowing like one day I might fight that guy. I got to watch him. I got to see him. I got to understand his tactics. I got to understand his weaknesses and his strengths. I got to know who he is. So I'm going to sit right here and I'm going to watch him live. So that right there is just one of the reasons, because that real feel and the Eye of the Tiger's playing and Rocky's doing his thing. He's knocking guys out. And you see that cold, cold look on the killer that is Clubber Lang. And he's just sitting there in the stands and he's like, I'm not impressed. Well, all these people out here impressed and everybody's up and they're going crazy and Clubber Lang knows, These guys that he's fighting, these guys are bums. I'll kill this dude. I'll knock him out. I pity the fool that gets in the ring with me. And that's what happened. Obviously, they come out, you know, they you see Rocky, now he's rich and he's driving these nice cars, and it's real. It's so real. It's just a story that unfolds the way that a boxer's life unfolds a lot of times. And you see now he's a champ, he's rich, his wife is wearing a mink coat, they got fast cars. You know, everywhere he goes, he's doing commercials and the gym is nice and got a bunch of cameras, and his trainer's like, I hate all this stuff, because a lot of trainers do, because they want to get to the real deal stuff. They have that first fight. Clubber Lang, you know, pushes Mickey. Mickey has a heart attack. Mickey dies. And then Apollo Creed becomes a trainer. They're doing the great training montages and things like that. Rocky has to find himself, like a lot of fighters do. They lose confidence after a loss. They got to go back, search for themselves. They got to do some digging. Then they come back. Some of them come back stronger than ever, better than ever after a loss. Some don't. But obviously Rocky did. Comes back. He knocks out Clubber Lang. You know, it's just... The way that the story unfolds is just so reminiscent and so down to earth and so real of a true boxer's life. And obviously boxing fans would know that, who follow these fighters at the rate that we do. And it's just really, really a great film. And for me, it is the best of the series. It's better than Rocky I. So that is my fourth on the Mount Rushmore of better sequels than the original. Number three. I really battled with this one, because I wanted to put it at number two, but I couldn't. And I'm going to tell you why. I couldn't put it at number two because the reason why is that one man made this movie what it was. What it is. One guy carried this movie on his back. Like Dwayne Wade carried Shaq, like Kobe carried Shaq. Those are the words of Charles Barkley, not mine. One guy. And that's why I didn't put it at number two, because Heath Ledger carried The Dark Knight. That's right. I'm going to say, for the first time in history, the Batman was carried by somebody else in one of his flicks. The Bat was carried. Christian Bale was carried by Heath Ledger. And I didn't put it at number two because this movie is about one guy. I understand that the rest of the flick is not that bad. Nice storytelling with Harvey Dent and things like that. You know, and his girlfriend and, you know, Mr. Lau and Morgan Freeman did his thing. And, you know, it was a nice complimentary cast to Heath Ledger, who is a supporting actor in the film. But we all know he's a star. Heath Ledger's the star of that movie. Christian Bale might have gotten the most screen time, but he's not the star of that movie. The Bat got carried in Dark Knight. Maybe he got carried in The Dark Knight Rises as well by Tom Hardy. You be the judge of that. But I'll say this. Everybody got on Heath Ledger's back for that movie. The opening scene, Heath Ledger coming out, the bank robber. They just thought he was a part of the team. Comes out, he's the boss that secretly calls everyone. Nobody sees his face. Nobody knows who he really is. He wears the face paint, and then they have mask on, so they obviously don't even know it's the Joker that's there. Comes out, they steal all this money that he doesn't even want to steal. Just doing it just to do it. Kills his whole team. They break right through the wall after they steal the money, and they land right in the middle of buses taking kids home and they blend in and don't get caught. And Heath Ledger continues on and does what he has to do. And obviously the times where Heath Ledger is just doing his thing and, you know, talking to different people just one-on-one. You know, when he talks to Gyllenhaal and he's telling her the story about his wife and how he got the scars. And then he tells a different story to somebody else on how he got the scars. He says, why so serious? And he's about to tell. And then obviously at the end, when he's talking to the bat and he's about to tell him about the scars and the bat throws him off and he laughs all the way down. But before that, he's talking about the city and how he's going to break their soul and their spirit and things like that. And the way he visits Harvey Dent in the hospital and he blows up the hospital and then he, you know, he hits the remote and he looks at it comically and like, oh, it's not working. And he shrugs and then it blows up and then he starts running and he goes right into the bus and they just go off. And, you know, he's just brilliant in that movie. And his dialogue with Harvey Dent in the hospital, I mean, just crazy. The Joker, the greatest Joker of all time. My apologies to Jack Nicholson. But you got outdone. You got outworked. You got outacted by the greatest Joker of all time, Heath Ledger. Hands down, to me, there's zero debate on who the greatest live action Joker is. And I'll even say this. Heath Ledger's better than Mark Hamill. I got Mark Hamill at number two. Now, I understand Mark Hamill did more work as the Joker. He was in the video games. He was in the cartoons. I get all of that. But Mark Hamill does not have one performance that is better than Heath Ledger's performance. He does not have the greatest Joker performance of all time. Mark Hamill doesn't have that. He was given the opportunity as a voice actor to have a bunch of opportunities. So Mark Hamill, my respect to him. But he's the second greatest Joker of all time. Because if Heath Ledger will continue to do more movies as a Joker, obviously his time was cut short. I just think it wouldn't even be a debate. But obviously because he only has one, it's a debate. And Mark Hamill has a bunch. It's a debate. But I'm going with Heath Ledger. Number two. I was debating between number two and number three. But number two, because it's more of an ensemble cast, because there are multiple characters that did their thing here, I got to go with Back to the Future Part 2. Back to the Future Part 2, I don't care what anybody says, it's better than Back to the Future. I love Back to the Future. I could watch the first two movies all day. The third movie, you know, I watch it. I like it. I'm not saying that I have the trilogy. And I'm not saying that I don't watch it when I get the chance. I enjoy it. But obviously, it's a big drop off from the first two. But number two, Back to the Future. Looking into the future. There's a team in there called the Miami Marlins, and that came to pass. They talked about the Cubs being in the World Series, and that almost came to pass. Almost. The Cubs are a good team by the time that Back to the Future 2 predicted that they will be a good team. Gray Sports Almanac and the story with that. Going back into part one, making sure that you know, Marty from part one doesn't see you, that Doc from part one doesn't see you. Making sure that the parents get together. Making sure that, you know, they're not erased from history. All these great things that happen in the movie. The alternate timeline. Going back and everything's different because of Gray Sports Almanac. The way that, you know, Biff goes back in time, hands himself the book. And then that changes everything. So you got the best of both worlds. You got part two and part one mixed up in the movie. Then you got this alternate timeline where Principal Strickland comes out with his gun and just says one of the best lines ever. Comes out, shoots at these young bucks that are driving by his house, and he just says, "Eat lead, slackers." I love it. I love it. Biff Tannen, he's rich. He has his big high rise. And then Marty comes and confronts him and tells him, "Hey, I want to know about Gray Sports Almanac." And then obviously Biff tries to kill him because he said there was a distant relative of his that, you know, said that an old man or a young kid will come by and ask about the book. And as soon as they ask about the book, kill him. So Biff was setting up his future. And I've thought to myself a bunch of times, that movie got me thinking, man, I wish I had a Gray Sports Almanac. So obviously, you know, we see his mom, Marty McFly's mom, get older and things like that. And then things return back to normal. And then when they return back to normal, life is better for the McFly family. Biff is a guy working for them. So I love it. It's better. You know, his girlfriend in the second movie, Elizabeth Shue, she's a better actress than in the first movie, than Jennifer Connelly. Well, I believe it's Jennifer Connelly was the girlfriend in the first one. She's just a better actress. So all around for me, Back to the Future Part 2 is better than Back to the Future 1. Just a lot of things in the movies, a lot of Easter eggs, a lot of just callbacks to the first one. And obviously the second one, the plot thickens, as they say. And I think it's better. Before I get to the number one sequel of all time, I'm just going to say this. I was going to put this movie at number one. I'm sorry, at number five. Whoa. At number five. But it's, even though it's a sequel of the franchise, the genre is different. And that's Fast Five, with my boy, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the most electrifying man in sports entertainment and the biggest box office attraction in America right now. I didn't say he was the greatest actor. I said, listen close, he's the biggest box office attraction in the United States of America, the most followed man on Instagram. Because he's big time box office ticket seller. And he came out in the Fast franchise in the fifth installment as Luke Hobbs, as the antagonist in that movie. And obviously, we understand that the first film, The Fast and the Furious, was a great film. I love it. Paul Walker, young Paul Walker, young Vin Diesel, young Jordana Brewster, young Michelle Rodriguez, all these fine actors and actresses. They were just kids making a racing movie, and they made a heck of a racing movie. But the thing is that Fast Five is no longer a racing movie. It becomes a heist film with fast cars. So now the franchise has become about robbery with fast cars. No longer about racing. No longer they're going to the auto parts store and getting nitrous and trying to find out the best specification for the car. They still have a mechanic, Tez, who's hooking up all these things and computer guys and things like that. But it's not about racing anymore. From Fast Five on, it hasn't been about racing. So because the genre is different, I won't put it there because it's not about racing. Now, if it was about racing, I would have put it right there. But I can't do it. I want to do it, but I can't. And obviously, Fast and Furious 2 is trash. Fast and Furious, not good. Tokyo Drift, I didn't even watch. So I'm not going to say that any of the sequels that are about racing are better than The Fast and the Furious. I'm not going to say that. No way, no how. But the honorable mention that I have, because it is a sequel of the franchise, but yet a different genre, is Fast Five. Luke Hobbs, strong character, did his thing. Loved him as the antagonist in Fast Five. Great film. Vin Diesel, Paul Walker, these guys, they were on. Everybody was on. They brung it. They knew who they brung to the franchise. They knew who was there. They knew it was time to sell tickets. They knew it was time to broaden the audience. They brung it. Like The Rock says, just bring it. And that's what they did. But that's an honorable mention, and I'm going to get to number one right now. Number one on the Mount Rushmore of the greatest sequels of all time here on All Talks of Life. This wasn't even an argument for me. This wasn't even, I'd lose zero sleep over thinking about this. The only thing I thought about was number two and number three and where to put them. Easy. Terminator 2, T2, Judgment Day, Arnold Schwarzenegger goes from being the hunter of Sarah Connor, Linda Hamilton in part one. He goes from being the Terminator to hunt the protagonist in the movie to being the Terminator who helps and protects the protagonist in the second film. Obviously, we know I'll Be Back has been just a culture-changing, culture-iconic phrase. The man put on the black coat. He got the shades on. He's riding the bike with the biker outfit. He wasn't doing that in part one. He was a stone-cold killer in part one. He did his thing in part one. He looked big. He looked beastly. He looked like a contract killer. That's what he was. Well, that's not what he was, because he was a machine. But that's the way that he acted. But in the second film, man, he did his thing. Robert Patrick came out, did what he had to do. He was a great villain. I think for me, Robert Patrick was a better villain in part two than Arnold Schwarzenegger was in part one. That's what I'm gonna say. He just definitely, just, I mean, as the liquid form that he was and getting shot and you see the holes, you know, and then the bullets popping right out of him and he's forming right back up and he's all right. And, you know, you could slow him down for a little bit, but obviously you can't stop him. And he barely said any lines. And Arnold didn't say many lines either. You know, it was really more Edward Furlong as John Connor who was saying most of the lines. And Linda Hamilton was also, you know, narrating a little bit for herself. And she was talking most of the time. But Robert Patrick and Arnold Schwarzenegger, they didn't have to talk a lot. They didn't have to say a whole lot of things. Joe Morton was in the movie. He was the director of the special projects of Cyberdyne, you know, of Skynet and things like that. So there's a couple of people here that, you know, good actors. Xander Berkeley, who's now on The Walking Dead or was on The Walking Dead. Esapatha Merkerson, who was a longtime lead actress in Law and Order. She was in the film. So some good actors in this movie, but great action, great story, continues to live on. Obviously, they made more films after that, making a lot of money and doing things like that. But Arnold Schwarzenegger going from what wrestling calls the heel to the face, to the baby face. Another saying in wrestling, the hotter the heel, the hotter the baby face. People hated Arnold in the first movie, and they loved him in the second movie. And obviously that turned into just years and decades of sequels and people loving the franchise more than ever because of Terminator 2, Judgment Day, the greatest sequel in the history of all movie sequels. For me, there is no debate on this topic right here of what is number one. No debate. Shout out to Arnold. Shout out to Robert Patrick. This is All Talks of Life.
All Talks of Life with Chris Benitez.